Hello, Andrew here from the Final Draft podcast, dropping in with a special bonus episode of our sporadic but ongoing series featuring incredible book podcasts from across the podcast, but more importantly, Australian landscape. As we get started, I will just let everyone know that 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I am recording on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people, and I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of those lands, to pay my respects to their ongoing connection to their lands, and to acknowledge that these are unceded lands, and that a treaty has never been made. Now, as I said, this is our ongoing series featuring incredible other book podcasts. It's an opportunity for you to find other places to get your book news, to get your book love, hear other people ask interesting questions, hear other takes on the books that you love. In today's interview, I am going to be joined by Catherine Collette and Kate Mildenhall. They are the hosts of the First Time podcast. They are also incredible authors in their own right. You've met Catherine on the podcast before, but Kate is joining us for the first time. Their podcast is called The First Time, and I'm saying the first time a lot, but they talk to authors about their first time getting published, about what it means to kind of go through that process. It is a fascinating insight into the publishing world, and Catherine and Kate are just gorgeous people. So today, on the special bonus episode of the Final Draft podcast, meet Catherine Collette and Kate Mildenhall, hosts of The First Time. Hello.
Hi. How are you going?
I'm good. I feel this need to like sort of say, hi, I'm Andrew. You of course know that, but
hello, Andrew. It's nice to put a face to a voice.
Terrific. It's weird. Yeah. So sort of etiquette, you know.
I know. Like it's so bizarre. And I also always have to check that I've not one of my children's names on my thing, but I'm not. I am actually my name.
Don't worry about that. I am a In my Monday to Thursday, I am a speech pathologist. I do a lot of Zoom with kids, and I have seen all sorts of fun names that they do.
I can only imagine. Wow, that's really interesting. I did not know that. That's your other gig.
That's my other gig. And look, Catherine's just joined us.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hello.
We were just chatting about Zoom etiquette and strange sort of avatar names that people might put on their profiles.
Did you know that Andrew was a speech pathologist?
I did. Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah. Which just seems so fitting. I wonder if you're really a speech pathologist because you have such a beautiful voice.
Yes.
Is that the, like, is there a link between those things, do you think?
I think that's, there's a name for what I want to sort of say. You've done your reasoning maybe backwards, or maybe it's more a correlation, okay, not a causation.
Interesting.
Would you all like to talk podcasting about books?
Let's do it. Let's do it now that we've got ourselves completely off track.
Awesome. All right. We're recording. It's all looking nice. It's so funny. As I'm just sort of finally sound checking, I'll just mention, because Catherine and I only spoke about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And do you remember, Catherine, we were talking about the Rodecaster, like Mike does. I interviewed, so the very first podcast interview was with Danny V from Words and Nerds.
I've just been listening to that.
I showed her the desk, and then the very next day she's tagging me on Insta and Twitter. She's just like, "You're dangerous, Andrew. I've just gone and bought this." And I ended up saying, "Oh, we need to tag Rode in this." And I'm just like, "Come on, give us something free.
Some free stuff. Yes,
sponsorship." My God. Actually, it was interesting because after we spoke about that, I think I saw someone on Twitter was like a local writer had bought one and was selling it, and I was very tempted, but I help it.
They are amazing.
So they must be the go-to for, you know, podcasting.
They really are, and they've sort of purpose built this thing. So I think at one point there was a little bit of a backlog at the beginning of the pandemic because everyone was moving into their homes. All right, here we go, Kate. For you who we've not spoken on pre-record air before, I'm gonna change into my Jekyll or Hyde face and be my radio persona and put an intro on.
Beautiful.
This.
I'm looking forward to it.
Here we go. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3 Final Draft, books, writing, literary culture, and podcasts. It is our new monthly segment, yet to be named, where there's never enough books, so why not discover more through other incredible book podcasters? I love meeting people with the same sort of passion as myself, and it is just my absolute pleasure to be welcoming Kate Mildenhall and Catherine Collette. They are they are authors and co-hosts of The First Time. Kate, Catherine, so great to have you on Final Draft.
It's exciting to be here. Thanks for having us, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And Catherine, of course, if you get like two more stamps on your card, there will be a free coffee as a frequent Final Drafter. I can see Kate's face. You're going to have to share that coffee with her.
Yeah, I know. And we don't drink the same coffee, actually. So that's going to be a problem. You can have me back anytime, Andrew.
I'll pop two marshmallows in for you.
Okay, thanks.
Now, our unnamed segment is all about other incredible podcasts out there, because we all know there's only so many books we can read and only so much we can cover. And it's nice to have other people to talk and listen to. The First Time is just this incredible, unique spin on books and podcasts, but it's not my podcast. So I'm going to start. I need to ask you guys, how do you describe your podcast to people?
So The First Time gets its name from, the longer version of The First Time is that it is a podcast about the first time you publish a book. And where it started was about five seasons ago now. I had just gotten a book deal for my first book, The Helpline, to come out. I had a great author friend in Kate Mildenhall who had a book come out a couple of years prior. That's Skylarking for Readers, excellent book. You should read it. So basically my book was coming out. I had a gazillion questions and I wanted to ask Kate all of them. So that was sort of the starting premise. Episodes would have me asking Kate questions about author talks and how to plan a book launch, how it feels when a book comes out. And we also did interviews with other amazing Australian authors, asking them a lot of the same things.
Surprise question time. I've actually given both Kate and Catherine a little bit of an idea of what I want to talk about, but they do not know this question that I'm about to pop. I need to ask about the name. When I listen to it, I'm hearing like Roberta Flack in my head, but was there ever a moment in time when you thought people might not get it or might be coming to your podcast with something else in mind?
I think they have come to our podcast with something else in mind. And I think at about the same time, we did a fair bit of research, didn't we, Catherine? Like, we were like trying to make sure we got the domain name and we were checking out, you know, iTunes and the rest of it. We're like, yes, we're doing this. And then at the very same time, and I know it because it's got like a pink little cover, because it always comes up when I'm Googling us, another podcast called The First Time about what you can imagine actually people think about the first time came up. And we did, you know, we thought about some of the first time music that we could have got, but it basically just cost too much. So we had to get a little jingle made for us anyway.
A jingle made? You guys are next level.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the philosophy of The First Time? What's your philosophy in bringing book conversations to readers?
Well, you know, I think like what Catherine said, how we started was trying to be as candid as possible and trying to be really real about it. And I think when we were talking about this stuff like 5 years ago, there weren't heaps of people talking about whether you should send a box of cakes to your publisher on launch day or not. You know, all these kind of little questions about this little stuff in the industry that led on to bigger stuff. Annabelle Smith and Jane Rawson had a fantastic blog called What to Expect When You're Expecting a Book. And that was the kind of vibe that we were going for, which was like, let's be honest about money, about anxieties, about all the stuff that goes on. And so that's always been our vibe, both with each other, which has proved problematic at times because, you know, it's pretty vulnerable to do. Like, we have recorded through now, Catherine, you've recorded through the launch of two books. I've recorded through the launch of one. Like, it's a vulnerable space to be in. But I feel like we've done that with our interviews too, is to try and ask the authors that we've spoken to, both debut and much more experienced ones, to get really real about what has been shit about the process and what's been the highlights and what they've learned as well. And I think that's what our listeners, who are mostly writers, would you say, Catherine? Or, I mean, that's the feel of the community we've got.
And I think, you know, as writers, early stage career writers, certainly when the podcast began ourselves, we had both imagined that getting published would be an experience of unmitigated joy.
Yeah.
And I think it really takes you off guard that the feeling is so much more complicated than that. I think putting any sort of creative, artistic thing into the world is great fun and you can feel really proud of your work, but there's a lot of other feelings that go along with it. And I think that we have really built a community around exploring and picking at all of those darker feelings.
Yeah. Also that philosophy on trying to get as kind of a diverse range of experiences of publishing book, you know, people who have been self-published, people who got picked up on slush piles and also write in different genres. I think certainly for me, seeing that every single person has done both the publishing process, but also the writing process and the dealing with failure process and the publication bit process a different way kind of is permission giving for you to do it any way you want. Mm. And I think people really appreciate that too.
What have you learned? I'm deviating from my script because, as I say, the first time is really very unique in that you're bringing this process, but also I guess there are elements of the narrative driven side of things. What's really taken you about people's, you know, what they're telling you on the podcast that blew you away from your own experience, made you think, wow, I'm so glad we got that out in the world?
Oh my gosh, you want to go?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think one of the cool things that we did was we got Charlotte Wood, I think season 3 or maybe even season 4. Obviously, Charlotte is an incredible Australian author. Probably her biggest book is The Natural Way of Things. But we got her on board as an agony aunt. And so we would get questions from writers and authors asking all of these things from really practical publishing related stuff to questions about confidence and how you keep your confidence going when things get hard. And one of the things that Charlotte said that has always stayed with me was that confidence is a decision. And I think for writers, I mean, you can look at that in a really simplistic way, but I think a really nice way to think of it is just around an attitude and to push yourself. And I think, yeah, for me, that's one of the big takeaways that I've walked away with. What about you, Kate?
I can't even possibly think because I just feel like every time I walk away from an interview, it's like the best interview I've ever done. But I think something that struck us and actually got us both a bit emotional in the past year was we did a kind of mashup of some of the episodes that we recorded during COVID. And I think, I mean, you can never know these things are going to happen, obviously, but the fact that recording over nearly 5 years has also archived our process and a point in time for all of the authors, and that we were catching up, you know, every couple of weeks during lockdown. And you could just hear our voices kind of like going into this slump, which I think everyone, you know, particularly in places that were locked down, felt. It was kind of a real privilege, I think, to put that out and then to hear the response from readers to say, you know, you really made me feel something with that. You really captured this moment. And I feel like that was something important that we've done too. We've captured these moments of vulnerability, times when we've both had things unexpected happen that haven't been what we planned, but we've still kind of had to keep on recording and putting it down. And that was part of our, I suppose, what we wanted to do at the start.
See, that is so interesting to me because Final Draft is primarily a radio program, and whether this makes it on the cutting room floor or just straight into the podcast, I am primarily thinking about an audience that are maybe not selecting me in the same way that we select podcasts. They're tuning in. So I'm really, especially during the lockdown periods and especially during those really uncertain times of COVID, I really wanted to help people find something uplifting, even if that was just the connection. So, you know, when the uplifting just wasn't coming, there was still this idea that through books, through writing, we were connecting with other people, we were connecting with our local bookstores, we were connecting with writers that we may never get a chance, or
they may never, the listener may never get a chance to speak to in the same way that I do, but I wanted to give them a little bit about of that. Also, this, you were talking about your process. Are you conscious of having developed as sort of auteurs in the podcast world? Like, do you listen back to early seasons and think, I'm glad we grew from that? Like, I know I do.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Always.
Yeah. I find it, we actually, so we take turns to interview different authors, and whoever does the interview does the show notes. So even in a fairly immediate past sense, it's a struggle to listen to yourself. But I think what is nice about those early episodes is they're really candid. Like, we are very hard on sleeves in those early stages.
Well, also, we had no idea that anyone was going to listen to us. Like,
and Andrew, probably no one. Yeah,
probably no one was. I mean, they've gone back and listened now, which is frightening. We can see that from our stats. But we had to beg people to, and they were lovely and they came on the show. But we had to beg people in the first season to come on, and now we get, like, I imagine you do. You know, we get like so many books arriving on our doorsteps every week for people who want to come on, and so. We really did think that we were kind of just intimately talking to each other, and we did it in a studio for the first couple of years. So we were, there was no sense that there was anyone else in the room or anyone listening. And I think Catherine and I have both had the experience of like going out to events where people have said, oh my gosh, it's so interesting to see your face because I listen to your voice so much, or, you know, I'm such a big fan of the podcast, and it still really blows my mind when I realize that people are listening to us.
I mean, for young podcasters, people who have come to the art in the last 12 to 18 months, a studio is like the room that you're recording in, but with carpet on the walls.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it's an interesting experience because podcasting is so intimate in the creation and often even in the listening, but you can have thousands of people listening to the same episode. Like, it's a really interesting contrast. So you feel like you're just talking. I feel like I'm talking to Kate, but
well, no.
It's not the reality.
It's not true.
All right. It's time for me to come back on script. I had all these incredible questions, but I realized they needed to change for the first time. But there are people out there who are going, well, thank you, Andrew. You have now given me something new to listen to. Where do I start? They've mentioned there's like seven seasons. Guys, what's an episode? Where do you recommend people start?
Do you want to start with this one, Catherine? Have you got one in your head?
I think although, you know, things are a little bit rougher, those first couple of episodes are a really nice introduction. And sometimes I think we should reintroduce at the start of the season. We are just about to kick off something different for this latest season, so that'll probably start in March. But the episodes that we had last year, we had a number of different authors. Probably a couple of favourites for me were Pip Williams, obviously the author of The Dictionary of Lost Words. Gary Disher is a great episode. He's a pretty prolific crime writer. Kate, have you got some ones you'd like to highlight?
My favorite of last year and the one that I'm still kind of recovering from is that I got to interview the queen of Auslit, Helen Garner, and it was such a fabulous interview, and I was so terrified about it. Andrew and Catherine knows how terrified I was about it, but it was just incredible. And then we, you know, turned off the recording and yarned for another hour or so afterwards. So that was pretty amazing. The one that has got the most engagement though is a really recent one. We've done a little mini series to help, around the launch of Catherine's new book, The Competition. And we talked to one of my dear friends who's got nothing to do with lit, but is a kind of social media guru. And she kind of talked Catherine through what Catherine needed to do on her social media to get this baby off the ground. And we have never had so much engagement from our community and listeners. Like, everyone just loved Shay, loved her analogy about how social media is like being at a dinner party and you have to bring a salad. So if people want to just have their mind blown about how to use social media to your advantage and not be so scared of it, go back to that one, our social media episode with Shay Gardner.
Okay, I'm noting that because that's probably something I need to do. There's so much stuff about podcasting. Have we weirdly turned my show into a little bit of the first time?
I think we have. You know, Andrew, how can we help you?
I love it. Look, nice diversion. Nice try to time to change tack. But this is the most important part of the show. I don't want to scandalize anyone. Content warning, we are going to get into the really hard book questions. If you are not ready to confront the darkest corners of your reading, maybe tune out. There's no swears. It's just those really tough questions. You have each chosen a scandalous book question. Catherine, you're first on my notes, so I'm just going to ask you. Do you judge books by their covers?
Absolutely. I think we all judge books by their covers, and I think that would make an interesting podcast episode. Actually, the art of book design. Mm. I guess that's both my long and my short answer.
Does it stop you reading? Have you ever been like, I hate this cover, but I'm still going to give the book a go?
I think I love a beautiful cover. Probably, if I had to characterize beautiful covers, I'd say they sit in a more literary space. I think there was a spate a few years ago, a lot of floral covers, which were very beautiful things. Not all of my reading tends to such literary taste. So sometimes I have things with beautiful covers that are waiting to be read. But I do love a beautiful cover.
Also, your first cover had like biscuits with texture. Do you remember when that arrived and we were like just touching it and holding it up to our face?
And I remember them talking to me about that. So my cover of my first book, The Helpline, has a biscuit on the top, and then the backdrop to the biscuit is meant to be a serviette. So it has that sort of raised feel of a serviette. And I remember my publicist saying that was a big deal. They talked for a long time.
I'm jumping in, Andrew, but no. I have to say that very funny thing on Twitter recently. And because there's been a spate of like women kind of laying on beds or up against walls with their hands in their heads or off the edge of beds, and someone had posted, on book covers, and someone had posted, you know, can someone check if this woman's okay? Because I think also that's what happens. You get like a run on a look for a cover, and suddenly then everything looks the same for a little bit.
I'm absolutely looking at my to read pile and thinking, are there two that I can? But a really good segue there, Kate, because do you all remember, I think it was really early on in me doing the show, which is now in its, I think I'm in my ninth year.
Oh my gosh. You're a legend in this, in
only,
this space.
It's only 3 years on the show's been a podcast, but 9 years on air in Sydney radio. So this must be about 7 or 8 years ago. Do you remember gender flipping covers? That was like a thing for a while. It was more an American thing, but
what did that look like?
The whole deal, I think they mainly focused on gender flipping. If this means any sense, and I'm doing a lot of scare quotes here, male covers. It was mostly looking at, I guess, classic or modern classic type of books, but it was taking the stylized elements that you've just sort of talked about, the fonts and the color schemes, and turning them into, I guess, pitched at a female audience. Kind of like, I mean, I even remember when I was a kid, when I was like a kid bartender, they introduced the long, slender beer bottles because the idea was it was going to appeal to a female audience. Yeah. And there's all these people
who
could be using their brains for other things, but instead they're trying to, you know, figure out how to market things to this construct of gender that we've somehow made binary and we can't accept that it might have other permutations. But look up gender flipping covers because it's at least a good hour or so of, you know, just some really fun graphic design.
Love it.
All right, I think it's your turn now, Kate. So, scandal. What do you say to someone on the train, at a party, in the park, when they say to you, oh, I'm not really a reader?
Well, Andrew, I mean, it's going to be controversial because I don't at all condone violence, but there may be violence involved, or I would at very least not say anything. I would turn and walk away because, I mean, who even are these people out there in the world who are not readers? I don't know any. And I think as a kind of follow on from this question, one of the most awkward things that happens to writers at writers festivals, etc., is when you meet someone and you haven't read their book yet. And and so there's that thing of like, oh, I haven't read your book. You know, I'm a reader, but I haven't read your book. And I remember feeling super, super stressed about that. Like the first year I was out on the writers festival circuit and like thinking that you had to know, you know, you had to be across basically Australian literature in its entirety. And you just don't, and you just can't. And I actually think it's more awkward when you have to say to someone, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. You don't have to have read my book. So I don't say it to anyone anymore.
It feels it's kind so of like you've dodged there and just been like, I'm sorry, I can't comment. The matter is still before the courts.
Yeah, 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 that's exactly it. And you're like, oh, so awkward. I mean, like, I know your book and I know how well it's selling, but actually I haven't read it yet.
So well, awkward. It's that weird moment too where you feel the need to divulge that. You don't need to divulge that.
No, you don't need to divulge it. No one, they're not going to say, look, I'm so thinking, quiz. How did you feel about chapter 8 and, you know, what I did there? Like no one says that. So that's been something that is good. It's good to learn that one. And I pass that advice on to debuts.
And in our position, doing the book podcast thing, the opposite almost happens where people will come up to you and say, so you've obviously read everything that was ever printed. What did you think of? And then I have these moments sometimes with authors where I'll just be like, and you said this really amazing thing, and I'll quote one of their characters and they'll just be like, I haven't actually read it since I published it. It was, I talked about this on the first time, actually. It was really stressful and I now have a trauma response.
Yes, yes. Well, you have to let some of it go, right? You have to shed some of it. Like, otherwise there's no space in your brain for, you know, the shopping list or anything else. You've got to let go of some of those characters and plots.
Well, thank you. I think you've actually freed a few people up, because knowing that it's okay to judge a book by its cover, but that you can still read it, Catherine, that is like, that's going to just really give people a lot of mental space. And Kate, yeah, we all need to shut up about where the bodies are buried when we meet non-readers. Oh, I'm going to get
so
some.
True.
I don't know.
They need more of those Cliff's Notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they just do a quick summary. You could probably just do a Goodreads, though, couldn't you?
I think there's an app. Someone told me about an app on my return to academia this year. Someone told me about an app that just, like, talks you through the big books. It gives you, like, a 10-minute breakdown of what happens in all the big books. Yeah, yeah, maybe we need that.
So this is a really, I think, interesting philosophical question. And one of the scandalous questions that you haven't chosen, because there are a whole list of scandalous questions, but there's one about finishing books. Mm. And to be perfectly honest, one view that I have is there are some books I don't need to finish, or if it happens that I'm not finishing it because of other things going on in my life, it's not like I'm, you know, I didn't pin my entire enjoyment of the book on that final page. Like, just being like, I made it to the finish line. It's more like I've got so much out of the prose. I've got so much out of engaging with the characters and the ideas. And you're not going to get that from like a Cliff Notes 15-minute version.
That's so true. That's absolutely true. You got to go the whole book, except I did not realize until someone told me what it was on Goodreads. I did not realize the DNF thing on Goodreads. I did not realize that there's a whole language around that this book was so bad. I did not finish it. And it threw me. It really shocked me. I was
a nice point though, that you can really enjoy half a book.
Oh,
yeah. And then that's not what they say on Goodreads though, Catherine. That is not what they say when they put DNF.
But, I mean, there are people who variously describe Goodreads as kind of like the social media that book lovers have always needed, and then others who are just kind of like, it is the sewer where the darkest parts of book Twitter go to, go to live.
Certainly writers should not go there. Writers should not
to look
visit
at their own book, but I do frequently look at Goodreads sometimes if there's a book that I want to understand, like, it kind of feels a proxy book club vibe.
I thought you were going to say to try and make myself feel better when I want to make myself look at someone else's book and go, oh, yeah, it's all right. They're only a 3.1.
Well, yeah, maybe have done that too. But I like that breadth of opinion sometimes if a book is like, I'm not sure where this is landing for me.
It's also a great place if a book doesn't have a marketing budget, and this might be because it's self-published or it's a book that I, for whatever reason, like Goodreads is going to be one of the primary sources of information. And I mean, that that needs to be a fair thing because
absolutely
there is a lot of stuff that we probably don't need to get into about what's going to get published and what's going to meet certain criteria of marketability at a given time. And that doesn't mean every self-published book is not just not good enough to be printed by someone else. And Goodreads is a resource for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for readers. And that's what I remember, like, is finally getting it when someone said to me, Kate, it's not for you. Like, you are not the audience for Goodreads. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. That makes sense then. It's for the readers.
Catherine Collette, Kate Mildenhall, co-hosts of The First Time. This has been wonderful. I've learned so much. And it's really, really just so great to be able to bring your podcast, which is so different to what I'm doing, but so essential, I think, for book lovers to get that insight to the world. I am speaking with Catherine Collette and Kate Mildenhall. They are the co-hosts. They are authors. They are co-hosts. They are The First Time podcast. And it has been an absolute pleasure to bring you to Final Draft listeners' ears.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. What fun.
Oh, that was good.
Isn't it nice to have someone corral us?
Oh, it's nice to talk about podcasting, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a real void in that space for people talking about.
Yes.
That's it for this conversation with Catherine Collette and Kate Mildenhall, authors and hosts of The First Time. I hope you enjoyed this. This was a particularly fun one because not only are Catherine and Kate, they're just, you know, consummate professionals and incredible podcasters. Just the in-betweens and the moments of candor, I think, really give an insight into what it's like making a podcast before you get to the hopefully super slick production that goes to air. I really hope you enjoyed this. I hope you go out and discover The First Time. Final Draft. You are listening to Final Draft, and it is recorded on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. It is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. Andrew Popel is me. If you want to say g'day, if you want to talk books and just catch up on reading stuff, you can reach out on all the socials. I'm a terrible social media person, but I try. Just go to @FinalDraft2SER, drop me a line, send me an @. Tag me in a picture. I don't mind. I'd love to hear from you. That's it for this week. But there are new books coming all the time. At the rate we're going, there's a couple of things dropping every week on the podcast. So it is a great time to be subscribed. So just, you know, hit subscription, whatever, in the podcast app you're listening to. And Final Draft will drop into your feed every week. Thanks so much. I am Andrew Popel. I will speak to you very soon. Happy reading.